Now, there are many causes to crime, but the increase in our crime rate is strongly correlated to our opioid epidemic.
The State Department of Law proposes tougher penalties for drug and sex crimes. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 1st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, concerns in northwestern Alaska over extending the Red Dog Mine's lifespan.
We're not trying to close the mine down. We just want as little bills as possible.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. The Trust Fund Land Office annual fall sale is in full swing across Alaska. Revenue generated by the Trust Land Office helps fund local programs for local people. View parcels and learn more at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Governor Bill Walker's administration announced today at the Atwood Building in Anchorage its support for tougher penalties for drug and sex crimes. It also plans to boost support for public safety in villages and schools. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the proposals and the response from the other candidates for governor.
Governor Walker plans to propose a bill to increase penalties against adults who sexually abuse minors 6 or more years younger than them. And he would require everyone registered as a sex offender in other states to register in Alaska. Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth says some offenders moving from other states didn't have to register.
We get into an argument about matching up elements in Alaska's law with elements of crimes in other jurisdictions. We need to stop that. If you have to register in another state, you have to register here.
The administration also wants a law to make trafficking the deadly opioid fentanyl a Class A felony. Depending on the offender's criminal history, that could lead to sentences of up to 20 years. Lindemuth says reducing drug use is important to lowering crime.
Now, there are many causes to crime, but the increase in our crime rate is strongly correlated to our opioid epidemic.
The Alaska State Defense Force is the volunteer organization that is part of the state's militia. The state wants to increase these volunteers' training with the aim of improving public safety in villages. Adjutant General Lori Hummel describes what the state plans to do.
The training for our Defense Force members there will include things like emergency incident command system, suicide and violence prevention, first aid, health and wellness, water safety, as well as traditional scout and field craft skills.
Village residents on probation could also check in with these volunteers in areas without probation officers. Another bill would establish a crisis chat and tip line to provide students a way to inform school staff about potential violence. The administration would seek another law to create a panel to review overdose deaths and develop methods to prevent them. Walker, who's an independent, says these public safety proposals are separate from his campaign for governor.
It's a very, very high priority, so we don't stand that down and say we're not going to address public safety because it's an election cycle. We just don't.
Republican candidate Mike Dunleavy is a former state senator. He said in a statement that he would repeal all of the 2016 law that overhauled criminal justice, known as Senate Bill 91. Quote, state government has no higher priority than protecting life and property. As governor, I will make public safety the number one priority of my administration on day one, not 30 days before re-election. I will ensure that police, prosecutors, and our courts have the resources they need to effectively fight crime. End quote. Democratic candidate Mark Begich, a former U.S. senator, says both Walker and Dunleavy haven't done enough to reduce crime.
It's 4 years and we've gotten worse, and it is time that we get serious about crime, quit talking about it, and do something. And my experience as mayor is exactly that's what you have to do. If you sit around and have more study groups, more task force, more conversation, crime only gets worse.
Begich also says he would repeal Senate Bill 91. He says he would replace it with a comprehensive plan. At the announcement, Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan cautioned against moving backward.
I'd been a police officer for a long, long time. And I can tell you that what we were doing before SB 91 really wasn't working. We are filling up jails. We are seeing recidivism, arresting, rearresting.
Senate Bill 91 was aimed at reducing repeat offenses. Crime statistics show that state crime rates had started rising before the law and have continued to increase as the opioid epidemic has raged. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The head of the Alaska State Troopers is stepping down after a little more than a year on the job, retiring from nearly three decades with the troopers. The Department of Public Safety says trooper staff were notified late last week of Colonel Hans Brinke's retirement. Brinke's departure was not announced publicly, and though spokesperson Jonathan Taylor says it's effective tomorrow, an assistant who answered Brinke's phone today said he no longer worked there. Taylor declined to say anything else about Brinke's departure, including whether or not he was asked to step down. The department has named Major Andrew Greenstreet as acting director of the Alaska State Troopers. Greenstreet takes the helm as the troopers struggle with staffing levels, officer retention, and rising crime that has become a focal point of campaigns heading toward the gubernatorial election next month. The massive Red Dog mine in northwest Alaska has brought cash and jobs to residents of the region, but the mine is expected to run out of ore in less than 15 years. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports on new expansion plans from the mine's owners that could keep it open for longer.
The Red Dog mine opened 30 years ago as a partnership between an Alaska Native corporation and a mining company. NANA, the Alaska Native Regional Corporation, owns the land where the mine sits. Its operations are run by Teck, a big Canadian mining company. Hundreds of Northwest Alaska residents and NANA shareholders have jobs tied to Red Dog. Robbie Kirk grew up in the village of Noatak and worked at the mine for more than a decade. He says that gave him skills that helped him make a career back home in Noatak, and he earned enough money to build a nice house there, too.
It's pumped a lot of money into our economy, which was otherwise not there. I gained a lot of valuable skills that actually brought me away from the mine so I could work here in Noatak.
Beyond the jobs, the mine sends hundreds of millions of dollars in yearly royalty checks to NANA, which shares the money with other Alaska Native corporations. But right now, all those benefits could disappear in 2031. That's when the mine is expected to run out of ore. Two prospects in the same area could provide Red Dog with more lead and more zinc, but first the deposits have to be confirmed. Teck has been doing preliminary work by drilling down into the prospects from above, but the ore is underground, and you can only get so much information by looking at it from the surface. To understand this, Kyle Mosell from the Alaska Department of Natural Resources says to imagine you're blindfolded. You're sitting at a table with a big bowl of Jell-O in front of you, and you're holding a straw and using it to try to poke down into the Jell-O to find pieces of fruit.
You know, that's kind of what exploration is. And so you can only poke those holes down and at, you know, certain angles. But if you put yourself in the Jell-O, well, now you can poke holes with that straw in 360 degrees.
To get into the Jell-O, so to speak, Teck needs to get under the ground. But first it has to get to the new prospects, and that's what it's now applying for state and federal permits to do. In January, Teck plans to start building a 10-mile road with a half dozen steel bridges from the existing mine to the new prospects. It also wants permission to build pads for things like a camp and waste rock storage. The company has been holding meetings in Noatak and Kivalina, another village in the area. Some Kivalina residents have clashed with the mine's operators in the past, saying they're worried about discharges into a river they use for drinking water and fishing. The new prospects are closer to the river. Janet Mitchell is a former Kivalina village administrator.
We rely so much on the trout. We gather it by the hundreds for our food for the winter. We age it and store it. So that's a huge concern for me. And I'm not the only one.
Mitchell says people in Kivalina want to make sure the mine operates carefully.
All we're doing is protecting ourselves. We're not trying to close the mine down. We just want as little spills as possible, as little dust flying out in the air as possible. And they've been pretty good about that.
Teck wouldn't speak on tape, but it says in a prepared statement that it's working with NANA and regional residents and elders to make sure the environment is protected. One other important thing about the new prospects is that they're on state land, so NANA wouldn't get royalties like it does now. though the road to get to the prospects does have to cross Nana property. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, three bears fatally maul a mine employee in Southeast.
We have never had any sort of injury incident related to two bears since we have been in operation.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kodiak Aleutians Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss proposals to change federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting October 15th and 16th starting at 9 a.m. at the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association Conference Room in Anchorage. More at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
The Coast Guard has suspended its search for a man reported missing from a fishing boat in the Bering Sea near St. Matthew Island. The Associated Press reports the worker was last seen Thursday on the Seattle-based Clipper Seafoods vessel, which was fishing, processing, and freezing cod. The Coast Guard searched for 24 hours but suspended the search Friday afternoon. At the time, the water was about 50 degrees and winds were 15 miles per hour. The Clipper Epic can hold about 60,000 pounds of frozen seafood and up to 25 crew members. A sow with two bear cubs killed a contract employee at Hecla Greens Creek Mine near Juneau this morning. Alaska State Troopers identified the victim as 18-year-old Anthony David Montoya of Hollis, Oklahoma. In a news release, Hecla says he worked for Timberline Drilling based in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. The incident occurred at a remote drill site on Admiralty Island above ground, the area only accessible by helicopter. Alaska wildlife troopers are investigating. Montoya's body will be sent to the state medical examiner in Anchorage. Troopers say all three bears were killed before they arrived. Hecla spokesman Mike Satry said the company is learning details and will release more as it becomes available.
We have never had any sort of injury incident related to two bears since we have been in operation.
The mine opened in 1989. Satry said bear safety is a standard part of employee training.
In general, every single one of our employees and our contracted workforce receive bear hazard training during their site-specific training that is required before they work on a mine site. And then we do everything we can to make sure that anything that we do, any of our materials, do not become attractive to bears and have them on our mine site.
Mine officials expressed condolences to the victim's friends, family, and colleagues. This is the second fatal bear incident involving an Alaska mine employee in as many years. 27-year-old contractor Aaron Johnson of Anchorage was killed in June 2017 by a black bear at the Pogo Mine in Interior Alaska. National Transportation Safety Board investigators are now at the scene of a helicopter crash in Lituya Bay. One person was rescued after the Friday incident, but three others are still missing. The Coast Guard suspended the search for the three people on Sunday. Clint Johnson, head of the NTSB's Alaska office, says the wreckage will be transported to a Juneau hangar for a detailed examination. The wreckage was visible at low tide with the main fuselage in a fragmented condition. The tail boom and some of the main rotors were broken off. Johnson says the Airbus H-125 helicopter does not have a flight data recorder like a commercial airliner, but some of the helicopter's state-of-the-art instruments have an internal memory that may provide clues about its operation just before it crashed. Johnson says two NTSB investigators, as well as representatives from Airbus and the engine manufacturer, have arrived to investigate the crash. Rescued after the crash Friday was 14-year-old Aiden Peppard, a passenger. The Anchorage Daily News reports he was transported to an Anchorage hospital for treatment of his injuries. Still missing is his 11-year-old brother Andrew and his father, 42-year-old Josh Peppard. Also still missing is 53-year-old David King. The elder Peppard is head of Davis Constructors and Engineers in Anchorage. King is with a Palmer helicopter company. It's still unknown who was flying the helicopter when it crashed. The City of Anchorage and Chugach Electric Association have worked out the terms for the $1 billion deal to buy the city-owned electric utility. The Associated Press reports City Attorney Rebecca Wint Pearson says Anchorage and the association have been negotiating the nuances of the deal for Municipal Light and Power since voters authorized the sale in April. The association's CEO says the deal has largely stayed the same to what was proposed to voters earlier this year. According to the agreement, no utility employees will be laid off, and the base electricity rates will not go up as a result of the transaction. Governor Bill Walker had named a dozen Alaskans to weigh in on potential road building in Tongass National Forest. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, none of the appointees work in Southeast Alaska's fastest-growing sector.
The U.S. Forest Service announced this summer it was taking steps to allow road building in Tongass National Forest. Logging interests say new roads are critical for keeping the timber industry alive. One of the appointees is Eric Nichols. He's a partner with Alcan Forest Products, which mainly sells raw timber to overseas markets. He applauds the Forest Service's efforts in working towards a plan
that relaxes some of the road lifts that allows Southeast to have an economic viable communities, especially in these rural communities, and that, you know, that we don't see a lot of litigation afterwards from the environmental conservation groups here.
But conservationists and some tour operators want the Tongass to stay intact.
Roadless areas protect the core of the visitor experience here to Southeast Alaska, and we're talking about Skagway at Ketchikan.
Dan Kirkwood is general manager of Pat Creek Bear Tours. He'd applied to be on the panel, but didn't make the cut.
We need to protect scenery, fish, wildlife, you know, the things that are bringing a million people, more than a million people, to Southeast Alaska every year.
Another roadless advocate that applied was Austin Williams with Trout Unlimited. He didn't make it on the panel either.
The committee seems to be heavily focused on resource extraction.
When he reads down the list of names, he sees logging, commercial fishing, and mining.
Certainly there are some good individuals on the committee, and I'm glad to see that. But it's alarming to see that there isn't anyone specifically advocating for sport fishing or hunting or outfitters and guides. And, you know, those are some of the most lucrative and important uses of the forest currently and, you know, really need a voice in this process.
The only appointee tied to tourism is Brian Holst of the Juneau Economic Development Council. The governor's press release describes JEDC representing tourism and other commercial interests on the committee. Holst declined to comment. Conservationists will be represented by Sitka Conservation Society and the Nature Conservancy.
You can always find somebody that thinks that they were left out or there's a balance is one way, too much or the other.
Michael Kampnich works for the Nature Conservancy on Prince of Wales Island. He said on the whole, he's pleased with the composition, given the state's tight time frame. But he also noticed the lack of sport fishing or hunting guides.
I also hope that there are some things in there I could, you know, help advocate for.
Governor's office spokesman Austin Baird said interest on serving on the panel was high.
When you had 37 applicants and you had to narrow the field to 12 appointees, there were definitely tough decisions that needed to be made.
Native corporations will be represented by a Sea Alaska executive. There's also a representative from the Yakutat Tlingit tribe. The Alaska Roadless Rural Citizen Advisory Committee, that's its full name, will get to work immediately. It's scheduled to begin a two-day meeting in Juneau on Tuesday. The committee will advise the state of Alaska. The recommendation will go toward a state-specific roadless rule, which could relax road building and logging restrictions in the Tongass. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state, from Valdez, Utqiagvik, and more. Information at flyraven.com. Starting October 1st, all of Alaska will be protected from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke because all public places across the state will be smoke-free. Everyone can now breathe easier as they work and play. Smoke-free workplaces and public spaces protects the health of all Alaskans. It also protects our youth from ever starting smoking. So if you do smoke or vape, please take it outside. For more information about the new smoke-free workplace law, visit smokefree.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Department of Health and Social Services.
Years of ongoing international deployments and even emergencies around the U.S. are drawing down the energy and manpower of the Alaska National Guard. Major General Lori Hummel would like to change that. Hummel and her staff from the Guard and the Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, where she also serves as commissioner, were in Sitka recently as part of a new rural engagement initiative. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Except for all the soldiers and fatigues delivering crisp yes ma'ams and no ma'ams in her vicinity, you wouldn't guess that the 57-year-old woman in jeans and a blue cardigan sweater was a two-star general. The U.S. has been deploying troops to conflicts overseas for most all of the second half of Laurie Hummel's career in the Army. She says that the Army, the National Guard, and the Reserves all missed their recruiting goals this year. And she gets it.
I understand. I'm a parent. I understand that there are concerns from the perspective of deployments. But I would also say that this is what makes our young people stronger and more resilient and more adept to face those challenges that we all have through our years.
While elements of the National Guard have been deployed to combat zones, Hummel says that the organization's role as America's hometown guardian hasn't diminished. She says serving within U.S. borders remains a huge part of being in the Guard.
Within the last year, we have sent Army Guard and Air Guard personnel to Texas, to Louisiana, to Florida, to Puerto Rico, to Virgin Islands, to North Carolina, and to South Carolina in order to assist with search and rescue and other types of hurricane recovery. And everybody comes back with a sense of satisfaction and a smile on their face because they helped a neighbor, whether that neighbor was across the street or across the continent.
According to Hummel, no other military branch has seen the dip in recruitment that the Army and Guard have this year. Traveling to Sitka with Hummel was Verdi Bowen, the director of the State Office of Veterans Affairs. Bowen said that he's starting to see two generations of veterans, parents and children, come through his office who have served in the same conflict.
And I understand being weary. Most of the time it's because of the number of deployments that our troops are facing that they're starting to wear down just a little bit. But I don't think that that negates anything that our Guard has to offer. I believe that the National Guard is probably the best thing on the block for the Alaskan kids, especially an Alaskan kid myself. It will provide them skill sets that they've never seen or could have access to.
Bowen says his job is to connect veterans with benefits before, during, and after their service. His office also oversees a group of volunteers who serve as tribal veterans representatives. In Sitka, that role is filled by George Bennett Sr., whom Bowen knows as a brother.
I'm a member of George's tribe. I'm a Raven. My name is Adesayisha. And it's sort of fortuitous because it means guardian father. So that's what I do in my job.
Veterans issues and recruitment, both into the Alaska National Guard and into the State Defense Force, are at the core of the State Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Rural Engagement Initiative, along with a renewed commitment to Southeast Alaska. Major General Hummel used her Sitka visit to announce that she's placing a full-time recruiter in Sitka who will join two already in Juneau. She's also maintaining armories in Sitka, Ketchikan, Juneau, and Klawak. But Hummel added that restoring the robustness of the Alaska National Guard would not happen by itself.
We need everybody's help. We need veterans to talk about their experiences and to mentor young people and help keep them on the right path. We need influencers like parents and teachers to talk about community service and how important it is to have a sense of being bigger than oneself. And we need our young people to have an open mind, come and talk to the recruiter, make their own decision as to whether service in the military might be something that is right for them.
And if a student decides that the military is the right choice, the Major General in the blue cardigan has three words of advice: stay fit, stay out of trouble, and graduate from high school. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Petersburg voters will soon be asked to decide whether or not to end a senior sales tax exemption and replace it with a needs-based rebate program. KFSK's Angela Denning has more on the ballot proposition, which has people speaking out on both sides of the issue.
Petersburg sales tax is 6%. The ballot proposition would end a sales tax exemption for local seniors and start a rebate program that gives qualifying seniors a check for $300 a year and couples $450 to use as they want. Currently, 574 seniors are sales tax exempt in Petersburg, or 18% of the population. That's too many people not helping pay for essential services, says a group of seniors bringing the ballot question forward. Susan Flint is a spokesperson for the group. She was born and raised in Petersburg and says the young people are carrying the load these days. She says the proposition protects low-income seniors and targets those with more money.
This is to get the other 300 or 400 seniors who have excellent Tier 1 retirements and a home in Palm Springs or Arizona or somewhere who pay sales tax there, to get them to pay sales tax here and contribute their fair share because they can afford it.
Sales tax makes up nearly one-third of the revenue for Petersburg's general fund. The senior sales tax exemption has been around for a long time, since 1980. Ted Smith was on the city council that approved the ordinance. Smith says the seniors today still need the help.
The senior citizens is the most vulnerable group of citizens that are here, and there are numerous ones that, even with a small rebate that they're talking about, won't be able to live comfortably. Let's put it that way.
The population in 1980 was the same as today, about 3,000 residents, but there were far less seniors. They made up about 6% of the population. Now, seniors are 18% of the population, and that's expected to grow to 28% by the year 2032. The borough estimates that $385,000 in sales tax was lost last year to the exemption. The figure isn't definitive because there's also a sales tax cap of $1,200. For the borough finance director, Jody Tao, it boils down to numbers. She says the expense of running the borough continues to go up, but state funding is going down.
That's decreased about $500,000 a year in the last few years. And so it's important that our sales tax numbers, our sales tax revenue goes up.
No matter the outcome of the vote, the senior sales tax exemption process will change somewhat. Starting in January, there will be a $100 administrative fee for each tax exemption card. That fee can be waived for low-income seniors. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Matt Miller, Jeremy Shea, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Nat Herz in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Angela Denning in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Did you know there's no safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant? But why should this matter if you're not pregnant or not trying to be? Because nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned. Many women don't know they're pregnant right away. You could get pregnant and expose your baby to alcohol even before you know you're pregnant. If you're having unprotected sex, don't drink. Learn how FASDs impact everyone, even you, at letstalkfasdak.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.